no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk. You can hear the Illegal Curve live Saturday mornings from 9 to noon on TSN Radio 1290.
I'm sensitive to it because I've been in awe of this guy since I got here. His work level, like, he's unimpeachable in his character and how he runs that room and how he plays. He's 11 points in 10 games. And yeah, shift length shorter, because I'm asking the whole hockey team to run their shift shorter. And that's what he does as a captain. He'll bolt off the ice as fast as he can.
From Wednesday mornings, contentious, if I can use that word, Winnipeg Jets media scrum, Jets head coach Paul Maurice with a full-throated defense of the Jets captain, Blake Wheeler. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. 3 hours of Winnipeg Jets talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Manuk. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can reach us here via Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you throughout the show. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text, send your comments, send your feedback to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, and any Manitoba Moose news and audio as well, that's available at illegalcurve.com. I say good morning to Ezzy. I say good morning to Dave. Nice to
morning,
see
boys.
You both on this frigid 6th day of February in the year 2021.
Yeah, like, if it wasn't minus 45 in February, I would be more concerned. Like, for all those people that are complaining about the weather, this is Winterpeg.
Winterpeg, sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's Winterpeg too,
this is,
I guess.
This is Winterpeg is what I meant to say.
It's a great start
and,
there.
Well, I mean, it's always cold in February. Like, we've lived here our entire lives. Like, what are people expecting?
Look, if you're...
I think we got, you know, treated to some nice mild temperatures a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, people forgot that this is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I think that if you're complaining, you're missing the point. I think this has probably been one of our most mild winters in at least a decade, so... I think we got a little bit of a bonus from Mother Nature, and now we're in for what is called reality.
Like, Dave, it's great hockey weather, right? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, it's a little bit too cold to go on the ODR, but, I mean, this is the type of weather where, you know, you sit in your house and
listen to a radio show, order
a pizza, and you know, well, I was talking about more.
Yeah, because you don't do that, you know, all days of the year. It's
yeah, exactly.
Only on cold days.
Yeah, I do that when it's plus 30 yeah. in January. Yeah. Or, pardon me, July. But I mean, it's hockey weather. You know, you get together and you know, watch some puck. Obviously, with only two people in your household, and obey all public health orders.
That's very good of you. Very responsible of you there. I'm surprised to hear you say things of that nature. But it's nice to see the new and improved, responsible Ezzy Ginsberg there, Dave.
Yep, that's a good point.
Let's talk about the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets, because it was a bit of a bizarre week.
Okay.
You know, they finished the homestand, yep. The 7-game homestand, 4-2-1. They take, you know, they win one against the Calgary, pardon me, they win two against the Calgary Flames, they lose one in overtime.
Shootout.
Pardon me, in a shootout. So, you know, the record is good for the week. The record overall is good, even factoring in the Ottawa games, but everybody's going to play Ottawa. So, you know, everything in terms of the standings, everything on paper looks good. But boy, you know, that Wednesday press conference, we heard Paul Maurice off the start there. That threw me for a loop simply because I didn't really understand, and I still don't fully understand, you know, the source of all the anger and why Paul Maurice felt the need to defend Blake Wheeler in such a... what I'm going to use the expression, such an overwrought manner.
Well, I mean, I would suspect... And again, I mean, I listened to it live, and I would suspect that that's just the coach defending his captain. I mean, you can call it an overly aggressive defense of his captain, but the reality is, I think what he's trying to do is draw a line in the sand and say, like, look, this is my captain. I'm not going to stand for... He wants to show his players in that room that he's got their back. And
right.
that he's prepared to go to war. Look, at the end of the day, you like him or not, dislike Paul Maurice, the reality is, the guy generally looks after his players.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, we've seen it from his Carolina days or his Winnipeg days, especially his veteran players. You know, I mean, so to me, I'm not really surprised. I mean, he'd had, I think, the first question about Blake Wheeler, fine. Then he has another question about Blake Wheeler. And I guess he knows based on, I mean, these guys aren't immune. Let's dispel one notion. The idea that people don't follow the media.
And the players don't follow.
I don't care who it is. It's everybody in hockey.
But
everybody in hockey who says, oh, I don't really pay attention. Yeah, you do. Everybody pays attention. They all do. So, again, guys know when there's a lot of criticism, and whether it's fair or unfair, the fact is people are aware of it, and I suspect, Drew, that's what played into, you know, Paul Maurice's overly aggressive stance on Wednesday.
Drew, I just want to get in here. I don't think anybody is surprised at Paul Maurice defending Blake Wheeler. I agree with Drew. Like, I'm not sure why Paul Maurice got so defensive. It's not a question of him being defensive, because everybody should expect Paul Maurice to stand up for his captain. People should expect any coach in any sport to stand up for their captain, and not just the captain, any player on the team, unless the coach has, you know, some type of disagreement. Like, if you're talking about torts with Dubois, like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about most coaches in hockey, sure, and sports should stand up for their players when they're being criticized, even if it's warranted. Mm-hmm. Right, guys? Like, I mean, a player has a bad game, the coach is going to say, well, you know, yeah, this wasn't player X's best game, well, but, you know, he's a good player, and, you know, we're expecting him to bounce back.
Like Maurice talking about Kyle Connor's back check, you know, calling it a horse bleep.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like Drew said, what's surprising about this is, like, and again, you know, granted, I wasn't following this, you know, throughout the week. Like, I'm watching the games. I'm not in the Zoom call, so I haven't watched the whole, you know, press conference, Dave, like the post game or what happened earlier. Like, I'm not sure, you know, who asked the question or what was said, if he was referring to, like, it seemed to me like this was Paul Maurice responding to general criticism, yeah, of Blake Wheeler that's out there, either on Twitter, well, on social media. And as far as I'm concerned, like, who cares about that?
Well, that's why I want to stop you right there. You know, so he comes out with this full-throated defense, and he's angry, and he's viscerally angry. But, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, what in the media, and I'm going to call it the, you know, I'll use the team, the lamestream media, you know, what had been said about Blake Wheeler that would deserve this response? And to me, that was where the disconnect was. Because any commentary, any articles that had been written, you know, here on the, any comments on this station, any articles in the paper about Blake Wheeler had been fair. That would be the word I would use. There was nothing that would be, I would describe as unfair criticism whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it led me to think, well, where is this anger coming from? And it's clear that the Jets and Paul Maurice were paying attention to social media. They were paying attention to, you know, people commenting on Twitter. And I'm thinking to myself, why in God's name are you paying attention to what people are saying online? Where is the benefit? You know, as the Jets head coach, as an organization, where is the benefit to your organization to be responding to what people Twitter?
You're making an assumption, though.
It's the only logical assumption, because there was nothing in the media.
The only thing I would say, just to slightly counter, is that he was receiving questions about Blake Wheeler.
He was receiving fair questions about Blake Wheeler having played very limited minutes the game before. Mm-hmm. And so the response could be, you know, you didn't need to pour gasoline on it, is all I'm saying.
I think he was doing that, though, as I said, to essentially quash the conversation, right?
I mean, we're still talking about it right now.
Well, we're talking about it because we're a Saturday show, and that we do a show once a week, and it's something that happened in the past week. But, I mean, as someone who, you know, aggregates the news, I mean, nobody's writing about Blake Wheeler today.
Well, but nobody was writing that much or anything that harshly about Blake Wheeler, you know, 3 days ago when it happened. That's why I just didn't think that it was the response was commensurate with any initial reporting. It just seemed like there was a disconnect there.
And Dave, you know I hate to agree with Drew, but I am going to agree with Drew here. And it doesn't mean I'm disagreeing with you, Dave, because I do think there are some assumptions here. But I think the key point there is when Paul Maurice started to talk about analytics. And, you know, we've been doing this show. This is actually our 12-year anniversary here. But, you know, we've squashed this years ago. Like, analytics are a big part of hockey. If you don't believe that, then you're living in a different decade.
Sure.
I'm sorry, that's my own opinion. You can, you know, follow analytics a lot, or you can not follow analytics at all. But if you don't think that they matter, then you're out to lunch. As far as I'm concerned,
right,
they have a significant value in the evaluation and analysis of hockey. So that's not what this is about. What it's about is, you know, well, let's talk about the numbers. Like, Blake Wheeler's defensive impact has not been good this year.
That's
undeniable. Like, he hasn't played well defensively. Now, I don't know if we're going to get into, you know, the injury and all that, but like,
we are next segment.
There's been some speculation. You know, Mike McIntyre is, you know, one person who tweeted this out. Like, we don't know what injury Blake Wheeler has or if there is an injury, but, you know, when there's enough, you know,
circumstantial
fire,
the circumstantial evidence would point to there being an injury.
Exactly. So when Drew talks about, you know, this kind of, you know, where did this come from? I kind of agree. I don't think there were any reporters. And again, I have to admit, I haven't listened to the pre and post game conferences, you know, during these, you know, three games against Calgary, but it seems like, you know, this was kind of an overarching, you know, defense of, criticism that has been coming from different sources. Like, but we talked about social media. Dave mentioned it. Like, I think, you know, some players follow the social media more than others, and same thing, you know, goes for coaches and GMs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you can't really, you know, put out a blanket statement that says they all follow this, but there's no doubt that even though Blake Wheeler is piling up the points on the power play and he's, you know, at 11 points in 11 games here, nobody is questioning, you know, if Blake Wheeler is a good hockey player, or they shouldn't be, because he is a great hockey player. I think what people are questioning is, you know, is he hasn't been very good at 5-on-5, and does he deserve to be getting the minutes he's been getting?
Well, and the answer, clearly based on his performance, in my mind, would be no.
Right.
And I understand, you know, Paul Maurice defending Blake Wheeler when asked by the media or asked when the people in the scrums are asking for an explanation regarding ice time or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. What I didn't understand, and I just still don't see the benefit for going, you know, for indirectly admitting and acknowledging that you're paying attention to what's being said on social media. Because the percentage, I mean, you get trapped in the bubble. You know, we're obviously on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you. And so obviously when you're in the social media bubble, you think that it's everybody. When it's such a small fraction of the audience that is truly engaged on social media on a regular basis.
Sure. I'll just tell you, though, having seen the reaction from fans across the stratosphere, I guess, wherever, we don't know where they're from, but generally folks appreciated that response from him. So I'm just telling you, like, you might not understand why he needed to go to that level, but the general response I'm seeing from people whenever that clip is shown is positivity from towards Paul Maurice based on his comments. So again, to me people will respect the fact, to Ezzie's point, you can talk about Blake Wheeler, what he's done on the ice, but I think overall right now, I think the reaction, again, it's not that I've parsed through every response, every comment, but I kind of look at them quickly, and like I said, the general response seems to be positive towards what he did.
And let's not pretend that that's out there. I mean, we know that, like, this is not the back-to-back 91-point season Blake Wheeler. Like, I'm not saying that he can't still be, you know, near a point per game or, but.
Well, in fact, I believe over under you had him as point per game.
I think it was, you know, right around a point per game, but I mean, it's not just the points because, you know, speaking of analytics, points are a very small aspect of hockey when you talk about numbers, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about goals and assists, right?
Of course.
So I think there's no doubt, though, like, Blake Wheeler isn't as fast as he used to be. He's not as effective at 5-on-5 as he used to be. But I'm also not as effective as I used to be when I was 29 years old, right?
And obviously, I would argue you're way more productive now than you are when you're 29.
You're probably the exception to that.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in bars when I was 29. But no, I mean, I think it is a healthy debate to have, you know, in terms of, you know, should Blake Wheeler be used differently at 5-on-5? And that goes back to the whole Laine versus Wheeler debate, right, guys?
And I think the Patrick Laine factor.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, 100%. It definitely plays in here, because I think that there's a lot of anger out there, wherever there might be, towards Blake Wheeler, that he's getting, you know, quote-unquote blamed for Patrick Laine not being here anymore.
Further to that point, speaking of social media, our Illegal Curve YouTube, it's amazing how many people will comment on, like, videos from, like, at the time I got it, right? Like, when the trade happened, like, 2 weeks back, I understood, you know, it's raw, it's happened. But, like, it's crazy to see, like, still, I'll see comments, not a ton, but still see comments filtering into our YouTube where people will, like, if it's a Wheeler clip, will say something about, well, you got what you wanted. So I'm saying, like, there's still, I think those two things are all tied in together.
Sure.
And I think there's going to be that element right now. until you got Pierre-Luc Dubois playing, and you got like, I think once you get a little time,
until Dubois puts a hat trick in the net for the Jets, then people won't be as worried or as upset about it anymore.
But I mean, and again, I've seen comments from people on message boards saying something like, you know, why are people going after him on like his own personal social media? So I think I think Drew that plays into it, right? I think again, like I said, these guys have social media. So they all talk to each other. I mean, they're a team, right? So these guys all discuss it. And I think that played into it to a certain degree. And again, like I said, so I think Paul Maurice, you can say whatever you want about him, but he knows how to handle the media. And I think that was his intent, was to really just full throw to defense of his captain, just to kind of quash and end the conversation.
When we come back, we'll talk about Blake Wheeler's on-ice performance and, you know, just and talk about his, you know, where the improvement needs to come from for the Jets captain. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Saturday morning. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.ca.
I mean, I guess I do understand you guys love to focus on me. But we got a lot of really good things going on. I don't want to bring a negative vibe into what we got going. It's a really good thing we got going in our room. And like I said, you know, if I'm on the ice, if I'm in the game, you know, feel free to treat me as if I'm 100%.
From earlier in the week, that's Jets captain Blake Wheeler talking about his own performance, talking about his health status, a lot of questions, of course, about that, and just generally, you know, discussing how he's being focused on by the media and by the general Winnipeg Jets public. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. You can reach us here via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us text messages to 129090. Anything good, we'll maybe even read it on air throughout the course of the program. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, I like that Blake said that because he's right. I mean, the media and fans do like to talk about him.
He's the captain of the team.
Well, exactly, though.
he's the captain of the team. Yeah. Of course they're talking about him.
Yes.
I mean, it sort of goes without saying that I think if you're the captain of the team, you're going to get the media focused on you. And look, you know, if you talk strictly about points, Blake Wheeler's having a very fine year when it comes to points. I think what people are focusing on is his impact at 5-on-5.
Yes.
Which has been, at best, probably a negative impact. And maybe
yes,
you want to be more positive and you want to say it's been average. Okay, fine. But any way you cut it, you look at, you know, if you look at the, you know, by the points factor, the strictly, you know, goals and assists at 5-on-5, or you look at the analytics, you know, at 5-on-5, Blake Wheeler has not had the impact that he's had in past seasons.
Right.
I don't think that anybody's surprised that Blake Wheeler is on the downturn to his career. I mean, when he signed the contract extension here, people said, ugh, you know, that could be a difficult contract to have to look at in a couple of years. You know, is that couple of years now? Well, I don't know. He's obviously still prolific on the power play, and that is important. But 5-on-5, Blake Wheeler has not had the impact that Blake Wheeler wants to have thus far this season.
And we have to be careful, right, when we say downturn. Like, this is not, it's not like in the last year or two, Blake Wheeler has taken this big nosedive.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're saying. At least I don't think that's what you're saying, Drew. It's certainly not what I'm saying.
I think
he has regressed at 5-on-5 over the last few years.
Which is following, you know, the aging curve of a player who's getting older.
Right. So
nobody, he's played a lot of hockey.
Right. Nobody's saying that, you know, Blake Wheeler shouldn't be, you know, in the top six or shouldn't be on the number one power play unit. Just to qualify that, that's not what we're saying. And it's amazing, guys, that, you know, we're having these, you know, conversations that are more in a negative tone, really, when the Jets are 7-3-1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Blake Wheeler's got 11 points in 11 games. The Jets are third place. And in the Central,
North.
A mistake there.
Yeah.
They're third place in the North Division, and aren't they only 2 points behind Toronto?
Yeah, they're,
right?
They're
so
yeah.
So it's like the Jets are, you know,
the sky, people would act like the sky is falling,
exactly,
but it's not.
Right? So what we're talking about here, really, in my opinion, and I'll let Dave get in here, but like this is a question of, you know, should Blake Wheeler be used differently at 5-on-5? And you've got Pierre-Luc Dubois coming in there, and we'll get into that later, but I think you have to look at who he's playing with, Mark Scheifele or Pierre-Luc Dubois, or maybe it's, you know, lately it's been Stastny and Wheeler, right? And you have to see, if you're Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, you have to figure out where is Blake Wheeler the most effective, right? Like, if his game has taken a step back at even strength, how do you get the most out of him? And this isn't something new. Like, Paul Maurice, you know, Dave Lowry, you know, the coaching staff, Jamie Compon, like, these guys, Charlie Huddy I should throw in there, even though he works, you know, more of the defense. But I think these guys are aware of this. This isn't something, like, new to them. Like, I think they've seen, you know, whether or not Wheeler's dealing with an injury, that's a whole different thing. But I think they've seen, you know, at times maybe he's not as good as they would like him to be at 5-on-5. So I think that's what it is as well. It's finding, you know, who are the best line mates? Like, his ice time. We know that, you know, people like to fixate on the ice time in terms of, you know, if a guy's playing 21 minutes versus 25 minutes. Well, you have to look at what's happening in the game. If there's a lot of power plays, you know, that's going to be a factor as well. So that's what it is. But there's no denying, you know, that he's struggled at times at 5-on-5. And the only people that really have the answers in terms of how to fix that is Blake Wheeler and the coaching staff. We can't go out on the ice and you know, change that.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Do you think that Blake Wheeler is nursing an injury? I mean, we know what our buddy Mike McIntyre says. He says that, you know, he's almost, you know, he feels strongly that you know, Wheeler is nursing something.
You know what? You can only take the guy at his word. And what did Blake Wheeler say? He said, if I'm on the ice, you can take it that I'm 100%. Now, the reality, of course, being that nobody's at 100% when the season's underway because these guys are all nursing some sort of, you know,
ailment.
Ailment is probably a better word than injury.
At the beginning of the season?
Well, no, not necessarily, but I'm saying, like, generally, even sometimes you come through training camp, you got some bumps and bruises, you're not necessarily 100%, but now 11 games in,
yeah.
I'm not saying there's a little wear and tear there, potentially, and so I couldn't say definitively, nor would I, that he is dealing with something. I mean, again, you have to take, if he tells you, I'm not suggesting that he's going to be 100% forthright, but the reality is, take him at his word. If he says he's healthy, then we have to judge him based as if he is a healthy player.
So how do the Jets get more out of Blake?
I agree with Dave on that one. Like, I mentioned Mike McIntyre and you know, others. I don't think, you know, Mike is the only person that has pointed that out. But if Wheeler is telling you that he's healthy, you know, Dave has a point. At that point, you're just speculating.
So how do the Jets get more out of Blake Wheeler, particularly at 5-on-5? I mean, that's the question that I think is on everyone's lips. That's, you know, okay, you have this player. He's the captain of the team. You know, he's obviously the engine within the dressing room. You know, because, you know, that's clear. Paul Maurice has made that clear. Yeah. The organization has made that clear that they want Blake Wheeler to be the driving force.
Yeah.
You know, and he certainly is that within the room. How do they get more out of him on the ice?
Well, if you're talking about, you know, line combinations and usage, like, I think Wheeler should be playing with Mark Scheifele, and that's not a surprise to anybody because, you know, the analytics will show you that, you know, Scheifele and Wheeler, even though, you know, they've struggled at times at 5-on-5 defensively, offensively, and that's a key point here. I think a lot of people, you know, have looked at certain plays against the Flames or the Canucks, and don't get me wrong, like, there have been plays where, you know, Wheeler maybe could have been a little bit harder on the back check or a little bit more aware in his own zone, but I think you want Wheeler, like, when the Jets were at their peak back in 2018, when they had the 114-point season, you know, Connor Scheifele and Wheeler was such a dominant line offensively at 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. Were they the best defensive line at 5-on-5? No, not at all. So to me, that's what you got to have. You got to have Scheifele and Wheeler together. And whether it's Ehlers or Connor on that left wing, like, yeah, I would probably take Ehlers over Connor. But there's nothing wrong with going back to the well and putting Connor Scheifele and Wheeler together. Where Dubois slots in, that's a whole different story because you might have to move Dubois to the wing or you might have to move, you know, Paul Stastny to the wing, right? It's probably going to be one of those two unless you have one of those two guys as your third line center. So
that's coming up at 10:15. Don't get ahead of yourself there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel here. Blake Wheeler, pun intended, Blake Wheeler is an amazing player, and even though he's regressed a little bit,
he's also the Jets.
I don't think he has to, like, it's not like Blake Wheeler has to rediscover how to play hockey here, guys.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, the question is he the best option to be the number one right winger for this team right now? I mean, you know, given the team how it's currently
lined up. It's either that or you've got Ehlers on your top line, right? Like,
right, but I mean, you know, Ehlers usually playing the left side more than the right
side.
That's what
I'm saying. Like, I mean, you don't have line.
You're not going to see Connor Scheifele and Ehlers together on a line.
Well, I mean, you could if you wanted to use Ehlers as a right winger.
Right, but there's been no sign that the Jets have any interest in doing that.
Like, are you going to use Pierre-Luc Dubois on the right side? I mean, like, to me, that would just be temporary. Right? So as it stands now, like, and it doesn't even matter. Like, Wheeler's going to be on your top line or your second line.
Right.
Right? So, again, like, I don't necessarily know that I have the answer to that. Like, is it, should he be playing less at 5-on-5? Maybe. But, like, he's got to dig deep and find a way to produce better at 5-on-5, offensively or defensively. Like, it's up to him. And that's why he's getting, you know, $8 million a year per season, right? Like, he's the captain of the team. I'm not as worried about it as other people, though.
When we come back, Dennis Bayak is going to join us, Jets broadcaster, talk more about the Jets. They're off, of course, today. No game, no skate today. They were off yesterday. Back on the ice tomorrow, where Pierre-Luc Dubois will presumably make his debut at Jets practice. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dennis Bayak up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290.ca.
Alrighty, it's Saturday morning. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg's across from me. Dave Manuk is to my right. You can reach us here via Twitter at Illegal Curve. Lots of comments coming in already. We'll get to some of them throughout the course of the show. Same thing on text message, 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Dennis Bayak, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, joins us on the program. Dennis, good morning. How are you? I hope you're staying warm on this frigid Saturday morning.
Yeah, that's the key today, Drew, no doubt. I'm good. Yeah, just no practice today, so I'm not sure that I even need to venture outside, but certainly won't be going down for my daily walk down by the river.
No, exactly right. Stay warm in front of a fireplace or something, or at least the fire log on your TV screen if you don't have a fireplace. Yeah. Dennis obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets. And, you know, it was to me a very funny week because in terms of on-ice performance, pretty good week for the Winnipeg Jets. You play Calgary three times. You get 5 out of a possible 6 points. You're feeling good about yourself. Your record is 7-3-1. Nothing to sneeze at, you know, at that point in time. Yet there's all this sort of noise. I'll describe it as noise around the Winnipeg Jets. And you were there and you heard, you know, Paul Maurice's comments earlier this week and then Blake Wheeler's comments and sort of the back and forth there. I mean, are you surprised that there seems to be this, I'm going to say this undercurrent of, bad vibes, for lack of a better word, given the team's on-ice performance?
Well, add one more thing to it, that Pierre-Luc Dubois is pretty much out of quarantine and will be at practice tomorrow. So another thing for the Winnipeg Jets and the fans to look forward to. You know what? This game in Canada, you guys know this. I mean, I kind of joke about it. It's the passion that pays us all. And Canadian fans love this game, and everything gets dissected. And when you don't have hockey until the middle of January, you know, normally by this time everything is kind of calmed down and people have kind of backed off a little bit on certain things. But right now everybody's starving for every little tidbit that they can find, and that includes the people that cover the team and trying to get stories out there. So it was an interesting week. You're right, they get 5 or 6 points and maybe play their best game of the week in the last game, and yet there was all this extracurricular activity or sidebar stuff that you know, that went on with Blake Wheeler and Paul Maurice, and you know, started with again just trying to break down a goal against that. You know, the coach had a different opinion than what some other people did as to how that goal came about. And you know, then it came up again the next day, and then Blake Wheeler's ice time in the Tuesday game became questionable. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that Blake Wheeler's playing with something. Lots of players are playing banged up, and he's trying to play through this, and as a result, it became a bit of a story. But you know what? There's areas to the game for the Winnipeg Jets, as there is for every team in the National Hockey League with no preseason and early in the season, if you want us to look at it that way, that need work. And you know, the work that the Winnipeg Jets need to do is being dissected with a magnifying glass right now.
You know, Dennis, going back to that game on Thursday night, Mason Appleton picks up a couple goals. You know, he's got 3 goals and 6 points in his last 6 games. And, you know, this is a perfect example of, you know, even though some people don't like to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it. Draft and develop, you know, plays a couple of years. Michigan State plays a couple of years, you know, with the Moose. He was a late round pick. And, you know, this year, you know, up to 7 points in 11 games. Is this just a player that's, you know, doing the most with the opportunity that's been given to him?
You know what, Ezra, David probably watched him develop more than any of us, you know, by watching him develop with the Manitoba Moose. But there are certain players that when they get to the next level, you can tell that they've made the jump. And I go back to Kyle Connor. You can follow that up with Jansen Harkins and now Mason Appleton. And Paul Maurice talked about this the other day. He was very good in the summer series against Calgary. And then normally a slow starter came to training camp and was very good right from day one. You know, and now it just gets more and more comfortable. The tools were there. It was a matter of putting everything together and then having the confidence to play the game that you needed to play. And I firmly believe that Mason Appleton learned a lot last year sitting on the bench with Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry about what that position that he's playing right now, what's needed, and he got comfortable with it, and now we're seeing a bit of an offensive side of all those players, not just Mason Appleton, but we're seeing a bit of an offensive side again from Adam Lowry and also Andrew Kopp. So good on him. And, you know, right now with all the talk about where everybody's going to slot in, you know, I think Mason Appleton is pretty secure on that third line.
You know, Dennis, one player we probably didn't anticipate talking a lot about this season was free agent signing Derek Forbort, but he's been such a pleasant surprise. Paul Maurice spoke about it when one of his press conferences this week said, you know, that was a great signing by Kevin Cheveldayoff. What have you seen from Derek Forbort? Him and Neil Pionk have seemed to form that Duluth pairing that have really just solidified the Jets' second pair.
Interesting, Dave, because during the offseason, when they signed him the offseason that should have been the season, but whenever we were asked about the Winnipeg Jets' defense situation, to me, the player that was going to have a lot of eyes on him through training camp and the start of the season was Derek Forbort. Was he going to be able to play top 4 minutes and a top four role for the Winnipeg Jets? And I mean, I chatted with some people in Los Angeles that saw him play a lot. The feeling there was that, yes, he would be able to play that role. It was a role he played with Drew Doughty. And he's come in, and Paul Maurice talked about Trevor Lewis exceeding expectations. You might put Forbort in that same situation. And not, you know, he racked up some assists early, and he got a goal the other night, the first one from the Jets defense corps. But him and Neil Pionk have been a very good pair. They know each other. They train together. And there's two players that right from when they started training together, right after Forbort signed, you know that the general feeling between the two of them was they were going to be a pair. And you do get the feeling that they talked a lot, perhaps watched video, certainly trained together and made sure that they were going to give themselves the best opportunity to be a pair for the Winnipeg Jets. And you go back to that first game against Calgary when he saved the goal and started the play back up the other way. But there's been a lot of other plays. His shot blocking, Paul Maurice references this a couple of times, his ability to kill plays. And when you can kill a play in your own end and turn it up ice or get a face-off, whatever the case may be, that's so critical, and that's what we've seen from him.
You mentioned him in passing. Dennis Bayak is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. You mentioned him in passing in that answer about Forbort, but Trevor Lewis, a guy who comes in on a PTO, obviously proves himself. He gets the one-year contract, and he's fit in so seamlessly on the Jets' fourth line and on their penalty kill. You know, how important is it? I mean, we know how Paul Maurice tends to defer to veteran players more than young players, but a guy like Trevor Lewis seems to be almost like found money for the Jets so far this year, given his, you know, low salary and really the limited expectations they had of him, signing him to the PTO, and he just fit in so seamlessly.
Well, a late signing, so you know that he was trying to secure something a little bit earlier around the National Hockey League, and then eventually had to make a decision and chose Winnipeg for a couple of reasons. There was a spot there for him. He was convinced of that by having an association with both Jamie Compon and Dave Lowry from the Los Angeles days, two-time Stanley Cup champion, lots of experience, and came here and knew there was a spot. Paul Maurice likes a veteran fourth line. It just hasn't been able to work out that way for them. It started the year that Nate Thompson, Trevor Lewis, and Matthew Perreault were maybe going to be the fourth line and three veteran players. That didn't happen with injuries and to Thompson. We've seen Vesalainen come into that fourth line. We've seen Jansen Harkins come in on that fourth line. David Gustafson come in on that fourth line. So, again, they're away from where they wanted to be with that fourth line. But the key to it all has been Trevor Lewis. And yes, gets the big shorthanded goal the other night. But here's a guy that has been through, I think, in a three-year span, he played 64 playoff games. That's a lot of hockey. And he's really solidified that line. And I think whether it's Harkins, whether it's Gustafson, whether it's Vesalainen, we talked about Mason Appleton learning a lot just sitting on the bench with Kopp and Lowry. I think every young player that plays with Trevor Lewis is being helped by how he plays, discussions on the bench, and just watching him day in, day out.
So Dennis, we're 3.5 weeks into the season. We've seen the Jets play every team except the Montreal Canadiens. And obviously, you know, the Jets and Flames have played four times, and then we have another game coming up next week. Overall, I just wanted to ask you what your thoughts have been on this Canadian division. You know, most teams have played, you know, around 11 or 12 games. You've got Vancouver, who's played 14 games. But obviously, you know, the Jets are right up there with, you know, Montreal and Toronto. It doesn't seem like, Toronto is doing a lot of losing. But have you been at all surprised by any of the teams? Did you think maybe a team like Ottawa would be doing a little bit better? Did you, you know, think maybe, you know, Edmonton would maybe be doing a little bit better? What have been kind of your overall impressions here, you know, 12 or 13 games into the season?
First off, I like the Jets' reaction to their game in Toronto, that they were very upset with themselves, that they didn't put up a better show. So I think they very much are looking forward to whenever they get to playing Toronto on a fairly regular basis. Same with the Montreal Canadiens. The general feeling before the season started that Marc Bergevin had done a great job with the Canadiens, getting them ready for this season, and I think all the prognostications were correct. Montreal is a very, very good team right now, so looking forward to when the Jets and Montreal hook up for a few times coming up on the schedule. I thought Ottawa would be better. Now, again, they won again the other night, and maybe they're going to get things turned around, but it's going to be tough in the North Division to try and gain ground. But something went off the rails for them. They couldn't stop that next goal. And you can point the finger at Matt Murray, I guess, in goal and say that's where it starts, and that probably is where it starts. But and he seemed to be back to his normal self maybe the other night against Montreal, but they're going to need that from him on a consistent basis. But it seems when they gave up a goal, they got on that bad run on the road trip. When they gave up a goal, they gave up another one right after. And that just got them behind the eight ball, and away they went from there. I still think Edmonton is going to be okay. They're trying to solidify, trying to find the right pieces on the back end. You know you're going to win X number of games simply because of what Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid bring to the table. And it's those other games that you got to try and get. Mike Smith is now coming off IR, so it looks like he's ready to lend some support to Koskinen and Nets, which is going to be much needed. Koskinen will need a bit of a break here, but because of the schedule being so busy. But I think Vancouver's going to be okay. Calgary has got a lot of road games on the schedule here coming up. They have to try and hold ground, until they get home. Although in past years they've had troubles in their own building as well. But I do like the North Division. I think it's going to be competitive right down to the end. I'm not sure Ottawa is going to be able to stay with the rest of the pack. But I do think it's going to be, maybe Montreal and Toronto and even the Jets, I think, can maybe pull themselves away a little bit. Time will tell. But there's going to be a battle for that fourth and final playoff spot, no doubt. But it's good. It's competitive. It gets lots of publicity. I think we're seeing the rivalries build, which I think for Canadian hockey fans is all positive.
Well, Dennis, you know, the Jets are they've put themselves into a good position at 7-3-1, and they don't even have Pierre-Luc Dubois yet in the lineup. So just how much more excitement should there be from fans, considering that you've got a premier center or winger potentially, but whatever he is, coming into this lineup and what kind of added dimension he's going to bring to the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, let's just put him at center for now and see where he is tomorrow at practice day, and we'll go from there. But so now you got Mark Scheifele, you've got Pierre-Luc Dubois, and you've got Adam Lowry as your top three centers. And then after that, whether Nate Thompson gets back in the lineup Tuesday or whether it stays David Gustafson or Trevor Lewis moves in there, whatever the case may be, down the middle of the ice, the Winnipeg Jets are as good as anybody in the National Hockey League. And if they decide to move Stastny to the wing, then he'll make that transition. He's been around the game enough to know what's needed. But strength down the middle, and that's where, I mean, Patrick Laine was an electrifying player. I'll never have a bad thing to say about Patrick Laine, going to back when I first saw him at the 2016 World Junior Championship in Finland, with that line with Aho and Puljujärvi. They were magnificent. But it's hard to get top line centermen in the NHL other than drafting them or other than unrestricted free agency. And then you're getting an older player. But I just think this was a great trade for the Winnipeg Jets. A great, good problem to have to try and figure out where everybody fits. But I like them up the middle, and I think this is a very good team.
Dennis Bayak is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, the fourth of four games coming on Tuesday night against the Calgary Flames. Dennis, we'll let you have the rest of your Saturday to yourself. Stay warm, and we'll see you soon. Thanks
you
so much for joining
us. Stay warm. Keep up the good work. Enjoy the Super Bowl tomorrow, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Dennis. Take care.
Go Chiefs.
Dennis's appearance on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your house for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. When we come back, we'll read some of your texts, we'll read some of your tweets, much more on the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.ca.
Gaudreau in on Hellebuck. Gaudreau slows it down to the backhand, scores! Johnny Gaudreau will earn the extra point for the Calgary Flames. Gets it into the slot. A stick on it and prevents Lindholm from tucking that in the far side. Rebound to the Fedorov, score! And Johnny on the spot was Mason Appleton to stuff this hole. Mikhail Connor trying to break away from Backlund, scores! Perreault sends it ahead on the backhand, and that is Appleton, scores! Mason Appleton gets his second of the night, and the Winnipeg Jets will pick up 5 of 6 points against the Flames in this three-game set.
Props to producer Sean Asor back at the station putting together that montage of highlights from the Jets' three games versus the Calgary Flames this week. As you heard Dennis say there, 2-0-1 for the Jets. Game 4 of this four-game series goes Tuesday night back in Calgary. Lots of comments coming in via our Twitter, at Illegal Curve, and via text message 129090.
And some of them don't include swear words.
There you go. Let's check out the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. First of all, our friends at Zappia Group Realty say, if we are sponsoring a Dennis Bayak interview, we feel we have made it. Great show as always. Thanks to Frank and Mauro tweeting us that comment.
Feel.
Sorry, I'm having some trouble there with the English language. Brian on Twitter says, I know Maurice loves his vets, and the D's responsibility is to get the puck up to the skilled forwards ASAP. But wouldn't it be better to put in our younger D like Heinola, who is a great puck mover, in a situation where we have all this offensive talent? We'll talk about the defense coming up a little bit later in the program, because the Jets D, of course, back to full health. How does that factor in? Tucker Poolman, he's ready to go. Billy Heinola, I know a lot of people want to see him back in the Jets lineup, so certainly a reasonable comment there. Ken says, hey, Illegal Curve, the Jets don't need to put Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler back together for 5-on-5. Look at PP1, look at the first power play. They play together there. They were having issues setting up on a regular basis. I say keep them split up until they can get that to work. Reasonable comment coming in from Ken there. And Bobby on Twitter says, good morning, Illegal Curve. Dave has this right. Coach Maurice interacts with the media purposefully.
To me, the most interesting part of his comments was, when you get a guy like this in your town, let's be real careful, etc. Invoking shades of overly negative media focus can drive players away. That coming in from Bobby on Twitter. Appreciate all the comments. Keep them coming throughout the show. Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets, we find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Okay, let's talk about the Jets week. The 2-0-1 against the Calgary Flames. Obviously, you can also include the loss to Vancouver last Saturday to make it a 2-1-1 week. But, you know, ultimately against the Flames, if you look at those three games, you know, it's a pretty good record.
Well, it's a team they need to separate themselves from.
Sure.
Because that's a team that a lot of folks, including ourselves, had them kind of battling for that third.
I'm surprised the Flames are struggling the way they are. You look at that Flames roster, and to me, it should be better. You got the goaltending in Markstrom. You got a pretty good defense there. You have the offensive talent that we've seen. So, you know, something's not clicking with Calgary so far early this season, I would say.
Yeah, and I just think that the Jets have, you know, the Jets played a fairly solid, you know, we talked about that game on Thursday. I thought they were very good. Managed to take that one over and you know, scored those three goals in the second period. And again, like I said, this is a team that you're going to have to go up against, and you've already played them now four times, and you've got three wins and one shootout loss.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty solid record against, again, like I said, a team that a lot of people, with the addition of Jacob Markstrom and Chris Tanev, thought was going to be, you know, a pretty big competition, sorry, for the Winnipeg Jets for that third, really that third, fourth spot in the playoffs. So, to me, again, like I said, I thought the Jets held them, and the Jets did what they needed to do, which is, again, like they battled them tight. And you know, again, we saw a number of players step up their game, like as he talked about in the first segment, Mason Appleton and what he was able to do. And I thought Matty Perreault the week before had really kind of started to elevate his game and start to play a lot like what you kind of come to expect from him. And I thought Mason Appleton this week was kind of that player who took that step forward.
The Jets are a better team than Calgary, flat out. And right now they don't have Pierre-Luc Dubois, right? So you take 5 points out of six from Calgary, and you didn't have Dubois in the lineup.
Although he is in the building, apparently.
And he is expected to practice.
He's in your house? Right?
No, he's not in my house.
Oh,
but he's at Bell MTS Place, and the Jets were taking pictures.
I'm sure he's done enough Zoom. I'm pretty sure Dubois did about 500 Zoom interviews in the last 2 weeks, right?
He did a lot.
So, I mean, like, back to the Flames, though, but, like, when you talk about this team, I mean, we had Haley Salvian on last week, and
covers the Flames for the Athletic.
Covers the Flames for the Athletic, and we were previewing, you know, the upcoming four games, including the three games at home, and you know, I don't think much has changed over the last couple of years, right? Like, the Flames are a good team. I don't think they're a great team, and I don't even think, you know, they might be the fifth best team. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs, but right now, watching the Oilers and the Flames, like, I think the Oilers are a better team. And that starts with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, but it's the same old with, if you shut down Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, Sean Monahan, and Elias Lindholm, you're probably going to beat the Flames. And Jacob Markstrom's actually been really good. David Rittich, you can't say as much. Like, Rittich has not been very good. I think he's only played a couple games. But, like, the issue is not goaltending right now, in my opinion, because Markstrom is an upgrade over Cam Talbot.
Oh, yeah. There's right? no question.
So, like, nobody's arguing that. I mean, you need more from, you know, a Michael Backlund, for example. He's got 2 goals in 10 games. Like, he's your second-line center, but you need more from those guys. Sam Bennett, of course, didn't play on Thursday night. He was a healthy scratch. But Sam Bennett, to me, is like a third-line guy who, you know, in an 82-game season, you're happy with, you know, 30 points, 35 points out of a guy like Sam Bennett. But you're talking about guys like, you know, Andrew Mangiapane, Dylan Dubé, who obviously has missed 3 games this year. But those are the types of players that you need more from. And I just don't know how much you can get out of those guys. And again, I realize that, you know, the defense is still pretty good, even though, you know, Chris Tanev is maybe, a drop-off from TJ Brody. But Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev, like, if you look at the analytics, and Haley Salvian talked to us about this, Hanifin and Tanev is actually your top pairing.
Yeah.
So Mark Giordano and Rasmus Anderson, like, I realize those are good offensive defensemen, and Anderson's quarterbacking the power play. But, like, that group is actually, that pairing, I should say, has struggled at 5-on-5. So I'm not really sold on that Calgary defense. Like, when I compare that defense to Toronto's defense, or Montreal's defense or Winnipeg's defense. Like, it's probably, to me, like, Ottawa's defense is definitely the worst.
Well, the Jets
and Calgary's probably the second worst, I would say, in the division. I would put Vancouver ahead of Calgary. You know, I would take, you know, guys like Quinn Hughes and, you know, Nate Schmidt, Alex Edler, Tyler Myers. Like, I would take the Canucks defense over the Calgary defense. So I look at that defense and I think there's definitely room for improvement. And you've got some young guys there, like Valimaki. Nesterov is relatively young, but I just don't think the Flames are that good.
Fair enough. That's you make a convincing argument. The Jets and the Flames Tuesday night. That's when the Jets will be back in action before they face the Senators in two straight Thursday and Saturday back in Winnipeg. When we come back, our good friend Marty Biron is going to join us, talk a little bit about goaltending in the Canadian division, talk really just about general goings on in the NHL. Much more Jets talk to come as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute. You can hear the Illegal Curve live Saturday mornings from 9 to noon on TSN Radio 1290.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Manuk. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We welcome you back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 1290. Some great comments coming in via Twitter and via text all morning long. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, TSN hockey analyst, MSG hockey analyst, Marty Biron. Marty, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing really good, guys. Just spent about 2 hours doing the snow blower and now get to relax for the rest of the day. That's great.
That's good. You put in your work, that lake effect snow getting you up there in Buffalo recently?
Yeah, and it's supposed to come back again tonight, so I wanted to make sure I got the first wave out of the way so I don't have double duty late tonight.
Yeah. Marty, obviously we brought you on to talk about some goaltending around the league, goaltending in the Canadian division. And, you know, a number of weeks ago I was talking to Eric DeHatchick, and Eric DeHatchick was of the opinion that because of the strange season, because of the lack of preseason games, sort of the way everybody sort of just hit the ground running, goaltending would be lagging behind the offense and the defense, you know, at least in the early parts of the year. You know, as you watch games in Buffalo and as you watch games throughout the entire NHL, do you agree with that assessment that the goaltending has sort of really what's being impacted the most as it pertains to the lack of exhibition games?
Yeah, and I think it's always like that at the start of every season, but this year was going to be a lot more obvious that goaltending and the save percentages were going to go down. There's probably a few more, and I don't have the numbers, but when it comes to scoring chances, but I see more grade A scoring chances, and obviously that's going to affect the goalie performance, but it's about systems, right? So usually you have a month in training camp, you can work on systems, on defensive zone coverage, on neutral zone forecheck, and that neutralizes the opposition, and also you have to, you know, add the fact that goalies, it usually takes them a month or so to get into mid-season form, and you get more consistent play from your goaltender. So I think it was to be expected. Now, I didn't think it was going to be that much of a factor in the Canadian division and the Scotia North division. I thought, well, with Hellebuck, with Markstrom, with Price, with Holtby and Demko in Vancouver, I thought, well, that division is going to be pretty solid in that. Now it's the highest scoring division in the league, and so you have to tip your hat to all the players that are playing above their means right now.
Marty, the Buffalo Sabres are in the middle of an eight-day break, which is obviously, you know, COVID-19 related. The next scheduled game for the Sabres is at home next Thursday, February 11th, against Washington. And it just came out recently. I'm not sure if you saw it, but the NHL came out with the schedule changes, and they've actually rescheduled. They've had to reschedule 12 of Buffalo's game. That game on Thursday that I mentioned, obviously, you know, isn't included there. But, you know, Sabres head coach Ralph Kruger, he's in COVID protocol right now. You have five other players that are in their in what's called COVID-19 protocol related absences list. That's a mouthful for me to say, but I wanted to ask you just, you know, what's it been like around the team? I mean, obviously there are other teams around the NHL that have been dealing with COVID-19, but is the understanding that, you know, this is under control? There aren't going to be other players on the Sabres, and across the league, how do you think, you know, this is going to play out? Because I think there is some concern that, you know, some of the American teams might not be able to play their full 56 games.
Yeah, well, they hope to play all 56. They hope to be able to get them in. As it is now, the Sabres would have to play 46 games in 87 days after their last day of cancellation, which would be Monday. So as of now, the training facility is still not open. The Sabres are waiting to see what happens today and tomorrow and Monday to be able to make that assessment with the National Hockey League. So they're hoping. Yesterday there was no new added case to the Sabres protocol, COVID protocol list. So they're hoping that today and tomorrow stays the same. But as you know, it could take up to 2 weeks, 10 days, for 10 to 14 days for the virus to show up, right? So we don't know how many players have tested positive. We know that Ralph Kruger did. The first two players to be added to the protocol were Taylor Hall and Rasmus Ristolainen. Does that mean that those two tested positive? I don't know. They're not making that public knowledge unless the players are going to come out and say, yeah, I had it. But this is going to be interesting to see where that goes. Now, I'm taking my calendar and I'm basically throwing it in the garbage and restarting from scratch, right? Because there's so many games that are being rescheduled. But I think the league is doing a great job at trying to figure it out. Now, obviously, you have the New Jersey Devils, the Buffalo Sabres. That affects a quarter of the East Division. You look at Minnesota, Colorado. That affects a quarter of that division, of the West Division as well. So that's a lot of games, and that's a nightmare. But I would say this, though. The players on the Sabres, and I'm sure there's the players on Colorado, are pretty frustrated with the fact that they were put in that position to play a team that seemed to have had an outbreak. We just heard, the NBA has been critical. I think there was a player pulled mid-game last night. So I think that the players have a voice, and they're the one on the ice and in the crossfire. So there's some frustration, I would say, across the league for sure.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
You know, Marty, the Jets and Flames have played three of four games straight, for Winnipeg at least. And on Monday, Connor Hellebuck let in a goal in the second period against Chris Tanev that, you know, was a hop, skip, and jump from back on the Flames' blue line. He bounced back, and he had an excellent performance on Thursday night, and he was kind of the Connor Hellebuck you expect, became the all-time, you know, winner for this franchise. But from a goaltender's perspective, how tough is it when you let in a goal that really you anticipate making that save, and it goes in?
It's a lot easier to give up that type of goal. That's a fluke. That's going to happen once at blue moon, right? So you kind of move on from it, but I'll tell you this. If I'm Connor Hellebuck or I'm his goalie coach, I say, listen, you know, a shot from the far blue line, you don't have to be on your goal line, and it's like a baseball player. Why do you wait for the bad bounce? Take a four, maybe go to the top of your crease, take an aggressive approach to it, but that's going to happen very rarely. So those are easy to get out of the memory bank and move on. It's the ones that the guy comes down the wing, takes a shot, it beats you 5-0, it beats you under the arm. Those are the ones that you say, I need to make those saves. The ones that are 170 feet away, out and bounced four times, I would say those are pretty easy to go. But you pointed out Connor Hellebuck. Listen, he's not played to the Vezina Trophy level that we've seen out of him. I think he's had, really, in my opinion, two good games or good to great games this year out of what? Out of eight, I think. So that's going to be something he's going to need to up his game. Brossois played pretty well. His last game was really, really good against the Flames. So I think that's a little bit of a shot in the arm, maybe, saying, hey, I've not played well. Oops, I gave up a goal from the other blue line. So how about I kick myself in the rear end and get going, and I think it worked.
Marty Biron is our guest, talking about some goaltending around the NHL. Marty, Ottawa has obviously struggled to start the year. They finally got their second win earlier this week against the Montreal Canadiens. Matt Murray, who they acquired in the offseason from Pittsburgh, was supposed to be, I'm not going to say a salvation, but he was supposed to be a solidifying force in their net. It hasn't been that so far. An .866 save percentage, an abhorrent 4.40 goals against average. What are you seeing when you watch Matt Murray, and is it a function of the defense in front of him, or the whole team in front of him, or is it a function of that plus a goaltender who's really struggling?
I think Murray struggled a lot, and unfortunately, I think, look, Matt Murray is an NHL goaltender. He's one of the 62 best goaltenders in the world, and there's something to be said to that. But when the Ottawa Senators made the trade, I had big question marks. When they gave him his contract, I have even bigger question marks. I'm thinking, well, what's happening over here? I do not like Matt Murray. And his trajectory the last couple of years, probably since Marc-Andre Fleury left Pittsburgh. So, that was a question mark for me. And I think we're seeing, a bit more of the answers right now. I don't know that he's the type of goalie that loves being under the spotlight in that way. When he had his success with Pittsburgh, you know, you've got tons and tons of talent in Pittsburgh, and the Crosby and Malkin, and what Murray had to do, although he played really well, won two Stanley Cup, can't really, you know, take that away from him. But all he had to do was good, normal, okay, steady, do your job. Now in Ottawa, he's being asked to do more, and I don't think he can give you more. So that's just the way it is. There's certain goalies that perform really well on bad teams, and then you put them on good teams and they don't perform well at all. Then sometimes it's the opposite. Some goalies perform really well on good teams, but can't translate to bad teams. And I think Matt Murray may be that type of goalie.
Marty, last question for you here. You know, we've had you on the show for years, and I always find it fascinating to ask you about goalies, because you've been a starting goalie, but you've also played that backup role, right? Buffalo, you were the starting goalie. Philadelphia, you were the starting goalie, but then you also played that backup role to King Henrik in New York. And I look at the Montreal Canadiens. You mentioned Carey Price earlier, and obviously the Canadiens are off to a great start, second place in the North Division. But, you know, Carey Price has had a few bad games. The game against Ottawa most recently wasn't his best game. That first game against the Toronto Maple Leafs, I mean, that was a high-scoring affair, but I think he let in 5 goals that game. But I wanted to ask you, how important is it to have a guy like Jake Allen pushing you? Because Jake Allen, I think he started 4 games versus Carey's 7, but he's been excellent. So how important is that, you know, for a starting goalie to have, you know, a backup goalie come in and you know, play really well?
Well, it's a tough line to walk when you're the backup goalie, to push your starter, but at the same time, push him in the way that it's going to, you know, get him maybe go in a positive direction. You don't want to be, and I hate when there's a competition and it turns to negative and then turns to a big elephant in the room, right? And I think what Jake Allen is doing in Montreal right now is exactly what Marc Bergevin wanted and Claude Julien wanted when they acquired him, and they gave him the contract even before his contract expired, because they want a solid backup. They want a guy that's going to give Carey some rest, that's going to win games, and it's going to make it easier for Carey Price. Well, he's never had that. Carey Price has never had that. So it's going to be an adjustment, but the adjustment is not going to take an effect in February or March. It's going to be taking an effect in April, May, and June, where they want Carey Price to be rested and being able to play his best. Now, I didn't think he was that bad against Ottawa the other night. I think it was circumstances, and he didn't have a lot of work. I bet you he would have wanted to have 35 shots, and he probably would have only given up 3 on 35, but he only got 22 shots on goal. It happened. He's not had to be spectacular to win games, but that's a positive for Montreal. They don't have to have Carey Price play his best game. They don't have to have Danault, Tatar, and Gallagher play their best game. They've been winning with Petrie and Toffoli and Anderson and Suzuki and Kotkaniemi and Jake Allen. So it works. I think the Canadians will be in a good spot later down the season. I think Carey Price will be in an even better spot with all the rest and the support.
Marty Biron is a TSN and MSG analyst. He joins us from his home in Buffalo. Marty, we'll let you get the snowblower back gassed up for the next
blast. Can we borrow that snowblower?
Yeah. Thanks, Marty. Appreciate it.
Have a good one, guys. Enjoy the hockey.
Yeah, you too, Marty.
Take care, Marty. Thanks so much. When we come back, Pierre-Luc Dubois is ready to join his Jets colleagues on the ice tomorrow at practice. How does that impact the forward lines going forward? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.ca.
How much are you looking forward to that first practice with everybody on Sunday?
I'm extremely excited. I don't think I'll be able to sleep the night before. I'm already trying to watch like videos on YouTube of practices, where I see like the 20 seconds on Instagram of the drills. But I'm extremely excited to practice and to meet everybody.
Pierre-Luc Dubois. Fans have been waiting to see him on the ice. That was in an interview with Sarah Orlesky. I believe that was in Thursday's Jets-Flames game. The Jets tweeted out a picture not that long ago. Dubois meeting with Paul Maurice. They're both masked up, so that's proper COVID protocol, so that's good to see. But you know that everybody, front office, his teammates, fans, everybody's excited to see Pierre-Luc Dubois on the ice with the Winnipeg Jets at practice tomorrow. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Delivery, curbside, you can still shop in their grocery store, takeout from the restaurant, whatever you need, Bernstein's Deli is there for you, even in these COVID pandemic times. You were there yesterday, were you not?
Yeah, I was there yesterday, of course, getting an icy sandwich.
Yes.
And I also have to say, I treated myself to a little Applejack at lunch.
You do enjoy a good Applejack.
Love those Applejacks. I believe they're from Gunn's Bakery, which is a staple in the Winnipeg's North End. But yeah, I had a nice little icy sandwich, and I did have to go back to work after.
Yeah.
But I did feel like having a nap.
I was going to say, your productivity.
I've always called it, like, when people ask me, like, what's in the icy sandwich, I just say, it's a nap sandwich.
Oh, that's a good way to describe it. I appreciate
that. So good that you're going to want to sleep and maybe have a cigarette after.
I don't know about the cigarette part. That's a separate issue altogether. And now the image of you eating a sandwich and smoking is burnt into my retinas, and I'm going to be traumatized accordingly.
I got to tell you, of all the images of Ezzy, that's probably one of the more pleasant ones.
That's true, I suppose.
There's been a lot of images of Ezzy over the years.
Comments coming in via text and via Twitter. Dave, one of our texters wants to know, will you be attending Moose games when they start? He says you have excellent insight on the up-and-comers.
I mean, I really should stop. I should really stop texting the 1290 line.
That's right. Yeah, this is Dave's phone number. Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, just a prompt so you guys would talk about me. But no, I will be at Moose games for sure.
Yes, once there's a schedule.
Once there is a schedule, of course.
So let's talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois. I mean, fans have been waiting. It's been 2 weeks now since the trade happened. About, I guess, 2 weeks, almost an hour ago since the trade happened with Line A and Dubois. We saw Line A score earlier this week for the Blue Jackets.
By the way, as a quick aside, Patrick Line A scored, Jack Roslovic scored, and Anthony Boteto scored, and the nicest goal of the three was Anthony Boteto's.
Hey, you know what? You can't hold a good man down, is what I think what you're learning about
Tony B can snipe.
I was like, is that Tony B or is that Brian Leetch? Like, I'm not joking. He was dancing through.
Good reference, because they're both American.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There you go. So anyways, yes, the former Jets were lighting up the lamp earlier this week. Dubois. I mean, people have been talking about where they're going to slot him. Where is he going to play? A texter just texted us and say, moving Stastny to the wing to get Nate Thompson in the lineup to play 7 minutes a game is a bad idea. Stastny and Lowry as your third and fourth line centers can make up for a less than great defense core. That coming from Dave on text message. Thanks for the text, Dave. I don't understand why you wouldn't start
with those four guys up the middle.
Right.
I don't like the idea of moving one of Stastny or Dubois to the wing. Mm-hmm. That's not how I would do it. How do you guys think this is going to play out?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll find out more at practice tomorrow, and then we'll see it. Presumably, you think he'll play on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have Sunday and Monday to practice with the team, so I suspect that he would play on. I mean, obviously, he's been off for 2 weeks, and he hasn't been, I mean, maybe he's skating on his own, but he's not, he's quarantined, right? Yeah. So the reality is, like, we don't know if the house has a rink that he can skate on, but the fact is,
he's on a little kiddie rink going around in the backyard.
No, but I mean, like, we don't know. So, I mean, look, this is a guy who's in the prime of his life, and so he's still doing all the cardio, he's got the machines, he's got the workouts, he's been doing everything he can, but again, he doesn't have the ability to practice with his
been doing Peloton is what he's been doing.
So it'll be an interesting question, but I guess we'll know probably not necessarily tomorrow when he does his first practice, but probably by Tuesday morning we'll see what the warm-up lines
are. And Dave, the thing is, I can guarantee you one thing. If he starts on the wing, or if he's on a line that you didn't expect him to be on, that's not going to last, right? So, you know, Drew just mentioned it. I mean, this mystery is going to be solved at practice on Monday or Tuesday. Most likely, whatever line he's on at practice is the line he's going to be on. And I agree with you. I mean, just logically, using logic, I mean, using your four best natural centers, that would be Scheifele, that would be Dubois, that would be Stastny, and that would be Lowry. And then you probably have top three center depth, top five center depth. I mean, it's a subjective argument, but it would be excellent center depth. Maybe even the best in the NHL, right? So that makes sense. But if you want to keep, you know, certain pairs together and certain lines together, you know, you might have to move one of these guys temporarily. Again, that's the caveat. Like, that, temporarily. But I agree with you, Drew. I'm not saying that I think Dubois or Stastny is going to start on the wing, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do.
But it's not like Connor, Stastny, and Wheeler have been doing anything fantastic as a line.
Well, they haven't been together that long.
They haven't been together that long. But I mean, if you were worried about, you know, about breaking that line up in the couple of games that they played together, it's not like that line has been performing. It's, you know, with all due respect to Paul Stastny, he hasn't been great this year.
But if anything, you're trying to, I would think, going back to a week ago when we were talking about this, I think you were trying to find a reason to not break up Ehler, Stastny, and Kopp. Like, if you want to look at which line has been the most effective together, it was that line.
Well,
like, that line was absolutely tearing it up, right? So I agree with you, Drew. It's not like we have to not look at this like it's the end of the world if a certain, you know, pair gets broken up, whether that's Scheifele and Wheeler or Connor and Scheifele or Ehlers and Stastny. Like, you're going to have to create room for Pierre-Luc Dubois. And nobody should be worried about anything here because, you know, the Jets just finished a very successful homestand. They're 7-3-1. They're 3 points, third place in the North Division. And you're getting a great center inserted into the lineup. So this is all good. Let's wait and see what the coaches do and then react after, because at this point it's all speculation. I realize there's trepidation here amongst some Jets fans, but it's all good. The Jets are in a very good position now. Ezra is here to tell you that things are going well. Everything's not perfect. Don't get me wrong. It's not perfect. Wheeler's been struggling at 5-on-5. You know, Hellebuck, you know, let in a long goal. Is anybody concerned about Connor Hellebuck? Because I'm here to tell you shouldn't be. He was excellent on Thursday night. Don't worry about anything. The Jets are fine. I'm not saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup necessarily. I'm just saying they're in a really good spot.
Who comes out of the lineup?
You guys could disagree, but from what I've seen from the Jets, I've liked, like, there have been some bad games. Don't get me wrong. The loss against Vancouver, the loss against Calgary, you know, the game against Toronto, that was early on in the season. I think they're in a pretty good spot. Like, they're probably exactly where I thought they would be. And again, that's just me speaking.
With a center coming in.
You probably shouldn't listen to me.
I usually don't. It's actually one of my life mottos is don't listen to Ezzy. With a center coming into the lineup, does that mean Gustafsson is out of the lineup? Does it mean that Gustafsson goes over to the wing and Vesalainen is out of the lineup? What about Jansen Harkins with his lower body injury? Doesn't seem like it would be something that's especially serious or lengthy. But
he didn't. I mean, I looked at his last shift in that previous game again on Tuesday night, and he was on the ice at the same end of his last shift, the same time as Christian Vesalainen.
Right.
So the reality being, it wasn't something it obviously was something that likely occurred during the game, but it didn't preclude him from playing the rest of the game.
And it'll be a week between games if he plays on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And that's, even if he doesn't, it seems like he'd be healing up sooner rather than later. So who comes out of the lineup when Dubois comes in?
I mean, it's either going to be Vesalainen or Gustafsson. I mean, that's just, that to me is a no-brainer based on the way Coach Maurice has structured his lineup for this season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually kind of like first man in, last man out kind of thing. So I think you're going to have Dubois come in. And I think, look, the truth is you could very seamlessly put Dubois with Connor and Wheeler and move Stastny to, again, people get so fixated on third line, fourth line, fifth line.
I like Stastny, Ehlers, and Kopp back together.
Whatever. But I'm just saying, like, you know, whatever it is, if you don't want to break up your center depth, I think, like, people get very worried, like, oh, is Adam Lowry your fourth line center? You know, and is he going to be on the fourth line with, you know, Perreault and Appleton? And again, to me, what a luxury of problems.
Sure.
But again, I don't think it's such the end of the world to have, if you say Paul Stastny's your third line center.
And Adam Lowry's your fourth line center.
And Adam Lowry's your fourth line center. Because again, you're Paul Maurice. You're going to play Adam Lowry. Like, look, Andrew Kopp played the most time on ice, I think, the last two games. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you know, where you are now, obviously, is on the first line. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that you're going to play in the penalty kill.
Sure.
You're getting power play opportunity. So it's not as if, you know, if you're the fourth line center, because that your team has that much depth, that it's necessarily a negative. And again, Paul Maurice could play the third and the fourth lines the same amount of time. But I just think, like, if you've got a guy who specifically is a center, why would you put him on the wing? So to me, to give you Scheifele and Dubois, that gives you such a good 1-2 punch that I think your next move is just to move Stastny down and move Lowry as your fourth and then go from there. And then again, like I said, whether Lowry's your or it's called Stastny on the fourth, like, I don't really care. It doesn't matter. I mean, to me, again, like I said,
if Stastny and Lowry are in your bottom six as your centermen, and we know who their likely wingers would be, those should be shifts played in the opposition zone.
Absolutely.
And that would hopefully mean, and we know how reticent Paul Maurice is to give that sort of the quote-unquote fourth line significant minutes, but hopefully that would mean you can bump up the bottom 6 minutes and, you know, take a little bit of the wear and tear off your top six, roll four lines.
Which, for the record, will mean you'll have a better team come playoff time.
I think you could easily have a fourth line of Adam Lowry, Matthew Perreault, and Trevor Lewis, which I think would be a good fourth line. Or you have Christian Vesalainen on that line, or you have Mason Appleton on that line. Like, these are all really good combinations.
The way Perreault, Lowry, and Appleton have been playing together, I'd be surprised if that trio would get broken up to, you know, when it comes to inserting Dubois into the lineup. I think that trio would stay the same, and then you'd see Dubois, you know, you'd see some juggling around there. Maybe Dubois plays, you know, with Vesalainen and a veteran player, somebody who can keep up with them. I think the speed factor is an important one in making sure that those guys can all, you know, whoever that third player is on that line, you got to make sure that they can have the speed necessary to keep up with Dubois, who's got such excellent, you know, straight-ahead speed.
If you want to read about Dubois, though, check out the morning papers, because everybody and their dog has been writing about Pierre-Luc Dubois and his dogs.
Well, there you go. Available on
IllegalCurve.com.
I'm a bird company man. When you come back, we'll talk about the Jets defense. That's back up to full strength. Tucker Poolman back, ready to join the Jets lineup. Is he getting in? What about Veli Heinola? What's going to happen with the Jets D? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.ca.